Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, to our fifth episode of The Fighting Priests. And today we are tackling a really difficult subject, a subject that is pretty much, I think, taboo in most Christian circles to discuss. And something, though, that kind of, I think, underlies a lot of our discussions, even in this podcast. And that is the place of not only jiu-jitsu, but martial arts and fighting in general. And when I say fighting, I don't necessarily mean violence, because I think, and we'll talk about that, you know, is fighting always equivalent to violence? Is it always equivalent to being bad? Or, you know, what are those, what is the difference between those two? But the place of fighting in Orthodox spirituality, or is there even a place, you know, for fighting in Orthodox spirituality? So, I don't know, this is something we're going to talk about today in our topic, Rolling with God. You know, Jacob's spirituality and pacifism. You know, do you have to be a pacifist always to be a good Orthodox Christian? And if so, if that is the case, which I'm not saying it is, but if so, then is it even acceptable to be involved in any type of martial art? So, Father Thomas, welcome again.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good. You know,
been getting ready for this topic for a while, because I think it gets the heart of at least what you and I do as Orthodox priests, preaching the gospel, but also engaging in, you know, choking people out on the mat sometimes, right? So, you know, are those two things compatible or incompatible? And it's something that a lot of people have asked me about. And I think we can try to explore it today, at least begin to explore it. And we'll see where it takes us. How are you doing up in Niverville?
Good. I'm just got a couple more exams to do, and then I'll be done my last year of seminary.
Yeah. You got mine next week coming up. Are you ready?
I hope so. I'm more worried about the Byzantine music one. That's what I've been studying for. So we'll see.
Coming back to our topic, the idea of pacifism, you know, I have a lot of people that ask me about this topic, and they, you know, some people are really in favor of, you know, engaging in martial arts, engaging in kind of like the sport aspect of it, the struggle aspect of it. And then other people are, you know, deathly against it, you know, like adamantly against it as Orthodox Christians. And of course, like the first thing that I think of, like the very first thing that comes to my mind is warrior saints, you know? And I'm not talking about saints that, you know, used to be soldiers and then they gave up that life and then went off to a cave somewhere instead of praying and became holy, but saints that were soldiers all the way to the very end. You know, some, obviously some of the greatest ones, St. George the Victorious, St. Demetrius the Myrrh-bearer, you know? St. Kateria, which is actually not a very well-known female saint, who is one of nine sisters who was actually, you know, who actually waged guerrilla warfare against the Romans and freed Christians from prisons during the first 300 years of, you know, Christian oppression under the Roman Empire, you know. St. Marina, according to legend, being also one of her nine sisters. So it's like you have stories within our Synaxarium of these holy people who are also soldiers, who are also fought.
Yeah, one of the more interesting things about St. Demetrius I found when I used to teach Sunday school at St. Demetrius in Winnipeg, before I went to seminary, was there's this icon. I think they might even have it at St. Demetrius in Toronto on the wall there. As you're going in the South Deacon door, I think it might be there. There is a picture, or there's an icon you can see, regardless if it's in Toronto or not, of St. Demetrius in jail, and he's blessing Nestor. He's blessing Nestor. Sorry, yes.
They both fight Laius.
Yeah, in the stadium, right? And the stadium, as far as I understand at that time period, was a raised platform surrounded by spikes. So it's that's how I first introduced my science school students to this topic of whether or not, I guess you can say in my experience, I'd put it like this. I found people who were raised in the West, whether they're Orthodox from birth or not, compared to Orthodox from birth who are raised in the East in a culture, you have two things that usually people in the West always have a problem with. It's usually alcohol and self-defense or violence in some sort. And I would say that's usually because if you look in the West, the major influence against those two things is this Puritanism that from the area of North America that we live in that has influenced everything that we do to the present day.
Sure.
In my experience, I'd see that. But yeah, the St. Demetrius, he's a good example, especially to blessing someone to go fight. That's a, we know it's always a joke now. We see it on social media, we see those Russian priests who are blessing missiles and guns or whatever. But it's like,
it's a big scandal for a lot of Orthodox, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because everything's black and white now because there's no nuance.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, it's much more nuanced. And the situation in life is much more, I guess you could say, complex than the kind of conclusions that we like to draw from scripture, right? So, you know, who is our example? Our example is Christ, right? And of course, Christ is the suffering servant. Christ is the one who goes to his death voluntarily. Christ is the one who gives up his life for his fellow human beings, right? There's no greater love than for a man to lay down his life. And people tend to look at that and say, well, Christ being the sacrificial lamb, Christ going like a lamb to the slaughter, like a lamb, he does not open his mouth, which is what we say in the proskomedi service, that translates into complete pacifism of all Christians, right? Eliminate any type of bravery, eliminate any type of ability to protect the weak, to protect yourself, to protect your family against those who would do harm to you. And of course, in the history of the church, this does not exist. We see that while war is never a good thing, and it's never seen as something that we should strive towards, nor is conflict, right, or violence in a negative way. Like, for example, actually fighting somebody because you're in fear for your life or someone's going to do harm to you. Those things are not to be sought out by Christians. But in life, those things do happen. They happen quite often in places. It's kind of funny how you say, like, in the West, we don't see it. Like, we see it when there's gang violence. We see it when there's robberies, when there's things like that that happen. But it's to a much lesser degree in kind of Western society than you see, for example, in the Middle East, where or Africa, or in like other third world countries where you have a lot more violence. It's commonplace. And along with violence, you also have more bravery being shown because you're in an environment where people are forced into situations where they need to either sacrifice themselves for their families, for the people who live around them, to show bravery. And that's something that I agree with you. We've lost in our society today. We don't have a lot of opportunities for bravery, bravery and quote unquote manliness. As Jordan Peterson even talks about this, you know, it's a lost art form. It's a lost virtue.
Yeah.
I was thinking about all these things. I'm just kind of rambling now, but, you know, yeah, all these warrior saints, you know, I don't think that it's mutually exclusive that one has to be, you know, completely pacifist and nonviolent, but also not, as if, you know, knowing how to defend yourself or defending yourself or others in times of great crisis, competing like we do in jiu-jitsu, for example, right? In competition where it's friendly, it's loving, it's not, you don't hate the other person, like, you know, we said in previous episodes, but we're just basically testing ourselves and growing and learning our bodies and learning how the art of jiu-jitsu, I don't think that translates into, you know, evil, like I'm learning how to kill somebody or I'm learning how to hurt somebody, right? I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I remember once I had a seminar with Master Silvio Behring. It's more of the, I've had a lot of experience with the more traditional self-defense aspect of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu from Rodrigo Mandaruca and from Silvio Behring, even George Brito. And so one of the things Master Silvio Behring said once is that it's like you're you're learning how to kill someone, right? If you were, if you were in a situation, you were, it's like escalating violence, right? You don't, if this guy's going to attack me with his hands, I need to be prepared to do one level above to stop him, right? So if he was to come at me with a knife, are you prepared to do the next level to stop him? So if you're not, then you need to like run away, right? Especially if you have other people with you. And this type of thinking, I used to be, there's so many things I used to be like against. I used to be against violence. I used to be against this. I used to be against a lot of things. And so, I don't know, I guess almost 20 years ago now or 15 years ago, I came across this novel. I was trying to find it today. It was a historical novel. It was in here in the Northwest Territories, about what used to be the Northwest Territories, which is now known as Canada. And it was during the fur trade. And it was about Jesuit priests. And there's two Jesuit priests, I guess, right? The Black Robes, they were called at the time. And one was like a total black and white guy. One was more inquisitive, you know. He would look at things as through a broader scope. And I guess their bishop came to visit them, and they're discussing this. And his bishop puts a hypothetical situation to the black and white priest. And he says, so if you're in your house, let's say, and you were married, you weren't a priest, and you had children, and someone came in, right? And the only way to stop him would be to end his life. What would you do? And this priest was just, he'd never thought about this before because, you know, killing is bad and it's just black and white. And most people never think of this way until they're put in that situation, or they think they would act a certain way until they're put in that situation. It's like this quote that you always hear quoted or misquoted. Let's see if I can find it. I think JFK first said it. He might have misquoted it. I think it was attributed to Edmund Burke. He said, in a speech in 1961, he said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Yes, the indifference of evil men, yeah. It's a very difficult conversation to have as an Orthodox Christian, especially as a priest. Mm-hmm. How do you strike a balance? And I don't know the answer to this. This is just us exploring this topic.
Yeah.
I wrestle with this. How do you find that balance between being the sacrificial lamb, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that even look like? Like, does that mean allowing everybody to walk all over you? Does that mean you allow anybody to kill you, to destroy your home, to kill your family, your children? Does that mean you never go to war? Does that mean you never go to the military, right?
Yeah, but it's also a very, I don't know how to say it, like it's like an ignorant or a privileged position, because the only way that you can have the only way you can be a pacifist is because someone else has decided not to be, especially right. If you're a nationalist, right? My problem with war is that I'm against war because I'm not a nationalist, right? I think fighting for countries is ridiculous. But if you're fighting to protect, if you were a nationalist and you were like, I'm going to protect my way of life, if you perceive it to be under attack, then for you to not participate in that process would only mean because someone else is doing it. So then it kind of proves the point, I guess, is that if you're living in a country that allows you to be a pacifist, that's your right. So you have someone else who's fighting and potentially dying to protect your right to be a pacifist.
Put themselves in harm's way.
Yeah, if you were to believe that your way of life is under attack or whatever.
Which in the ancient world, that was much more.
Way more in the ancient world, this would be a common thing.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's also the thing. It's that not everything is also an attack, for example, on your spirituality. Like, you know, Orthodox tend to think in these kind of like idealistic and sometimes extreme ways of saying, if somebody if you were caught by, ISIS and they told you to renounce Christ or we'll cut your head off, right? Mm-hmm. Which we see on the news. Well, not all situations are like that. that situation might call for you to be killed for your faith, as many martyrs have been. Yeah. But not all situations are like that. It could be more, has nothing to do with renounce your faith or we'll kill you, but more like, we're coming to kill and destroy your village, whether we don't care what you say or do. Well, okay. Do you just allow all the children and all the women and children and everybody else to pass away because somebody chooses that they want to destroy you? So there's all these kind of arguments. They obviously, they're not all directly relevant to jiu-jitsu, like what we do, but they are relevant in the sense that there is this idea of training, of being capable, right? And being strong, but also I believe there is something that builds character in you when you are strong and have capabilities, but choose to show restraint, right? So somebody who has the ability, for example, to inflict violence, somebody who has the ability to make decisions, for example, somebody in political power, or somebody who's in royalty. In the old days, you know, you had monarchies. People who have power, but they choose not to wield it, right? Mm-hmm. Or they choose to be gentle with the wielding of their authority or their power for the good of mankind. There's something to be said about that, right? Of having the ability and not using it, or using it in with restraint. And this is something that I was thinking about, you know, that a Christian is not necessarily weak. You know, why do we always have to think, or we have this idea in our minds that Christians are weak? You know, they're weak. They don't know how to fight. They don't know how to stand up for themselves, or pacifists. I don't buy that, because we don't see that in the history of the church, or even in the lives of the saints. We see different types of saints in different types of situations expressing their faith in the gospel and how they understand the gospel in different ways. And there are many different paths. So you have warrior saints, you have monastic saints, you have hierarchical saints, you have all these different people, and they all witness in different ways. I don't think there's just one way, right? I don't know.
Well, I think one of the problems is that many Christians and many Orthodox Christians especially are ignorant of the Old Testament. So it's kind of funny, the one that if you actually do learn the Old Testament, especially if you teach it to children, one of the first stories that you're going to teach them is David and Goliath. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you actually read any of the Old Testament, if you read just Genesis, which what I've been doing, it's like ridiculous how much violence is in there. It's you can't even, like, if you were to sit here and give, oh, here's, and use proof texts or appeal to authority about why violence or pacifism, whatever, is not this way or that, you could just look at almost the entire Old Testament of how the promised land is taken over, how tons of things. It's just the Maccabees. There's so many stories in there. Even if you study, if you were to pick up the church's book of the liturgy book, like the one we have for the archdiocese, we did this in one of the classes. There's so many words in the Greek that are military terms, right? But because we don't live in a military culture, the meanings
don't register.
Yeah. So there's tons. Even if you look at the depictions of in iconography of angels and saints, really, it's all military. It's all hierarchical. And then when you understand these words, especially if you sit down and just go through the Greek and look up these words in a lexicon, and like an Attic Greek lexicon for the words that are Atticized, it's amazing how much military imagery is there. Even if you could do something interesting, I'd challenge our listeners to do. You can do, they're very short entries. If you went to Wikipedia and you Googled, you looked up New Testament metaphors, athletic metaphors in New Testament and military metaphors in New Testament, you'll find some interesting stuff that would make you pause with what you're thinking about. Why mm-hmm. Paul would choose to use certain things if they were evil in and of themselves, right?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the Old Testament. It's like beyond, okay, like there's arguments which are not necessarily unfounded, that, you know, mankind evolves, mankind grows. The Old Testament, the New Testament, like the Bible is pedagogical, right? So, you know, you have, of course, you have a lot of violence in the Old Testament, and you have, you know, kind of like almost like mankind is almost like an infant. And yes, it's a kill or be killed kind of society, and, you know, the tribes at the time. And by the time we get to the intertestamental time, and especially the time of Christ, which was still a very violent time, you have kind of like mankind reaching a spiritual maturity where the level of understanding and the relationship with God kind of takes on a new level. And hence the idea of the new covenant and the New Testament and the gospel of love. And you know, you have this strong emphasis on love and forgiveness in the New Testament. And so people, you know, they kind of say, well, yes, you have all these things in the Old Testament, but are we really supposed to be, you know, following that, you know, we should be looking more to the New Testament, to the example of Christ and the saints who seem to be much more pacifist, right? And seem to be much more gentle and things like that. But I'm having said that, you know, I think back to the Old Testament, and not just in instances where people are kind of like claiming that God tells them to go and do things and, you know, violent acts and things like that. But instances, for example, and the main instance that I'm thinking of course, is in Genesis 32, which is, you know, Jacob wrestling with God. You know, and this is not a case where Jacob is wrestling with another person. You know, he's not fighting with his brother Esau. You know, like he's actually wrestling with God, and it's very clear that, you know, in the text itself, and I'll read a little bit of it in English, but I'll also reference the Greek a bit. You know, there's two references of Jacob and this kind of battling or wrestling with God, and one was in Genesis, the other one was in Ezekiel. But in Genesis, which is the first account, we see that it says that Jacob, you know, he in 32:22, he says that night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. And after he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man, in Greek it says anthropos, so it's man or human being, wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, that is Jacob, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched, and it was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. So like he basically dislocated his hip. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." And Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he asked the man to bless him. The man asked him, what is your name? Jacob, he answered. The man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome." And Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." And the sun arose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. So it's a really interesting story, because, you know, it's like, you know, Genesis calls the man, you know, it infers that it is God, right? Like, now, what does that mean? Is it God the Word, second person of the Trinity, is an angel? Ezekiel uses the term angel, but Genesis uses the word God, and he won't give his name, right? Because God doesn't give his name, and he wrestles with Jacob, and the whole name of Israel, right? The Israelites, you know, comes from this battle, like this wrestling, this struggle, right? And you know, it's so interesting to me that this the whole naming of the people of Israel comes from this kind of physical wrestling of man with God. And his hip gets dislocated, right? It sounds like a jiu-jitsu move to me, you know, like, and you know, and he doesn't give up. So there's value in struggle. There's value in struggle, and there's value in overcoming, and it's something that makes us strong. And God, he honors this by blessing Jacob and giving him a new name. So it's not even that Jacob is like, or people are doing this to other people, but that there is some type of struggle that is actually blessed by God, that is actually, like, you know, that is actually beneficial to us.
No, that's an interesting story. I don't know. It's weird. There's many different interpretations to it, obviously. Sure. I like all the references to grappling in the Bible. That's what I do. Yes. That word, the Greek word, it only occurs five times in the Septuagint, the paleo.
Paleo, yeah.
Yeah, five times. So I know Paul uses it as well, the wrestling metaphor. But yeah, I think, because there's different reasons, right? It's like, okay, if we're going to talk about, it's like that this video you shared with me recently of that one Orthodox, probably a young man, he was saying that martial arts was bad because an elder had said so. So what are we talking about when we're talking about martial arts? Are we talking about what up until 1993 would be called traditional martial arts, like where you're harnessing the chi and you're doing all this nonsense? Or are you doing something like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where you're struggling with an opponent, but you're really struggling against yourself, right?
Sure.
And yeah. Everyone knows that if you have a violent situation, whether it's with police or an army, or whether it's human beings that are just civilians, the more trained the people involved are, the less violence that actually is going to occur. You can actually see this with police officers because they're trained horribly. And there was a video recently I saw, and I believe Henner and Helen Gracie eventually saw it, and they shared there was two or three cops apprehending someone in a subway station, I believe in the United States. And this guy, they couldn't even hold his legs down. And he was like telling them what to do while they were arresting him. And then he like kicked the female officer, and she, I believe she might've even fallen onto the tracks of the subway. I can't remember it now, but there's so I think they go through the video and they evaluate, right? How, if you were to do this instead of what you did, right, you'd have this situation under control. And then you wouldn't have got kicked and fallen backwards or whatever. You can see there's so many times of that. There's videos you'll see all the time if you study. You know, Firas Zahabi, he used to, I don't know if he still does, he'd break down street fights on his YouTube channel, right? And you can always tell when there's people who are untrained and they're fighting, especially someone who engages in combat on a concrete surface, it's a very deadly situation because you're untrained and you're not even thinking about you. If you hurt someone and they fall and hit their head, right? That's probably a manslaughter charge at minimum. I believe it's very dangerous. So if you are trained in martial arts and self-defense and situational awareness, you're going to know how to evaluate the situation, and then you're going to compute it, and you're going to know all the possible horrible outcomes, and you're going to choose the path that leads to the least amount of damage happening to you and to the person that's involved with and to all those around you.
I agree 100%. One of the reasons why I put my son in jiu-jitsu as opposed to any other type of martial art is for that exact reason, is that, you know, the goal of jiu-jitsu is to subdue someone, not because you want to hurt them or you want to kill them, but you want to stop them from doing damage to you or anybody around them, to be able to control them, and especially to be able to control them until either they can't hurt anybody anymore or that authorities come or help comes, right? So it's basically, it's to temper a situation, to diminish and to kind of pacify,
yeah.
Somebody who is there to do harm, who is dangerous to society. And this is why it's called the gentle art, right? This is like one of the terms that we use for jiu-jitsu. There's a video I was watching this week from a Roman Catholic priest who's also, I think he's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. And he was being interviewed about the exact same thing that we're talking about. And he said that, you know, it's... you know, knowing these things and being able to not only defend yourself, but to know how to help others, especially in difficult situations, is part of being gentle. And it's also, and he mentioned also the Beatitudes, and he's, you know, he mentioned the Beatitude, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, right? And he was saying that, you know, meek is not necessarily what people think it is. Like when they hear the word meek in English, mm-hmm. they think of, you know, somebody who's a pacifist, who's quiet, who's kind of like, you know, harmless, right? And he was saying that no, rather meek can also refer to somebody who is powerful but chooses not to exercise that power, you know. Mm-hmm. Another way of translating it is gentle. Like a gentle person doesn't mean that they're weak. It just means that they know how to be gentle, right? It's like I remember last episode when we spoke with Joanna Shaman, she was speaking about rolling with gentle giants, you know, people who have a lot of power, but they know how to restrain it in every situation, right? And that's part of character. That's part of wisdom. That's part of life experience, right? And I think that's just as important in what we do with jiu-jitsu and like the struggle that we have with one another, the rolling, right? And it's part of what you see with Jacob. And God and you know the wrestling that he was doing and the honor and the respect that he gained from the Lord, and it's the same type of respect and honor that I think we also achieve for ourselves and others when we roll with other human beings. And why we're so close to the people that we roll with, why we're so close to the people that we train with, because it's a very intimate thing to do jiu-jitsu with other human beings. Because you're placing, you said this in the last episode, you know, you're placing your body and sometimes your life and your, you know, potential injuries in the hands of others.
Yeah.
And you're trusting them, right? Yeah. And they're trusting you that you're not going to hurt them because you're not there to hurt them, but rather you're there to train together and to excel together. And you need to have, you know, that type of, that growth, right? Which only comes from struggling, from struggling like Israel struggles. winding down our conversation, at least for today, because I have a feeling that we might revisit this in the future, because there's so much to say. One of the things that I kind of wanted to just close with is this idea of motivation, because anytime I find that people have a problem with anything, people get fixated on things and not the motivations behind them, right? So a lot of times we'll have Orthodox Christians ask us, ask me as a priest, I'm sure they'll ask you, you know, Father, what do you think about this? You know, what do you think about rifles going hunting, you know, or are rifles bad? Are guns bad? What do you think about knives? What do you think about martial arts? What do you think about tattoos? What do you think about this? There's a myriad of things where people want a black and white answer about specific things, because it's easier to demonize a thing than to analyze and explore with humility the motivation or the use of that thing, right? So I always try to remind people, it's like, you know, things are things and people are people, you know? And so when I think about jujitsu, when I think about martial arts, I think about, you know, self-defense, I think about fighting in general, wrestling, competition, it's really the motivation behind it, I think, that is key. It's not the thing itself, right? So if somebody is learning martial art, for example, because they have malice in their heart, because they want to learn how to hurt people, because they're just an angry human being and they want to inflict pain on other people, well, perhaps they shouldn't be doing it as an Orthodox Christian, right? If they're doing it because it's completely out of pride, they want to, it's a selfish endeavor. They want to prove to everybody that they're better than everyone else. There are people like that at my gym. You know, there are people who are there because they love the art form. They love exercising their bodies, learning about themselves, learning about the other, becoming better and growing as a skill. And then there are other people who are only concerned about getting the next belt, you know, only concerned about winning the next tournament, only concerned about, you know, what's the next level and how fast they can get to it. And time and time again, I've had instructors tell me, and I've seen so many videos and interviews and things like that in jiu-jitsu, and the most seasoned people, the people who have been longtime practitioners of jiu-jitsu, they'll usually tell you the same thing. They'll say, you know, when you get into it, don't worry about the belt when it's going to come. Don't worry about the stripes. Don't worry about, like, you know, the status symbols, I guess you could say, right? Just worry about practicing the art and learning it well, and all those things will come with time. And I think that's a very grounded, you know, humble way of approaching anything in life, any kind of skill set, not working towards the recognition of something, but rather working towards the attainment of, you know, of the skill set, right? So can I get good at this, regardless of whether somebody is going to recognize me or not, or what I have to do to actually achieve it? So this is kind of like the mentality aspect of it, that I don't think it's black and white, like we've been saying. I think that why we do things, like even why we go to competition, is it because I'm prideful? Is it because I want to show off? Or is it because the competition puts me in a situation where I am going to push myself to become the best I can at this particular sport, at this particular martial art? I don't know what your thoughts are on Father Thomas, but at least this is the way I view it, and the way I am.
My thoughts are what His Grace Christoforos taught me, the late His Grace Christoforos. He said, it's not what you do, it's why you do. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. A lot of people don't like that answer, because people, especially in the West, especially converts, they want definitive answers for everything. So then it's like, okay, you can give them definitive answers. St. Paul says, when you're young, give them milk. So you give them milk, but then as they advance, they're going to, unless they don't actually advance at all, then they can just hold those positions. It's like a story Father Athenagoras told me once. He's, I can't remember which patriarch. He said there was a patriarch, and there was a monk, and he was whatever, hearing this monk. He's telling him, blah, 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 blah. And he tells him, you're right. Okay. He helped this guy out, and now this guy felt better, so he left. The other monk, I guess, was spying, whatever he was doing, comes in. Patriarch, why would you tell him this? That's not right, blah, 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 blah. Again, nobody tells him. You're right too. So it's like some people, a lot of people, when they're asking questions, they don't want an answer. They just want you to confirm whatever they already have. So it's, I say to anyone, if they think someone, they should try it. You should, if you think anything's for a specific reason, anything that's not, of course, towards the edges of being morally beyond the scope of what your conscience would tell you, you'll know what, why you're doing something, and you'll know if you're lying to yourself and why you're doing it. So I think it just goes back to that. That's not what you're doing. It's why you're doing what you're doing.
And on that, I think we'll end. Thank you, Father. It was a great discussion. And as I said, I'm sure we'll have more.
Yeah, I could talk about it forever, but it's...
Sure. And we will talk about it forever, because we always wrestle with why we do the things that we do, and we make sure that we are always doing things for the
hopefully we're...
Well, hopefully we are, yes.
Even if you have a position that you think you're firm in, I would hope that you're still questioning it rather than standing on a hill of righteousness thinking that you have the definitive answer.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you, Father. Again, Christ is risen, because we didn't say it at the beginning.
Truly, he is risen.
And yeah. And we'll see you in 2 weeks for the next episode.
All right. Talk to you later.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.